Hello everybody, this is Peter Smith. I'm chair of the CPD Framework Steering Group for RICS, and I have a couple of guests with me, Chris Blundell and Liz Smith, both of whom are members of the steering group as well. And we've been hard at work since February of this year, checking into the CPD framework that exists in RICS and seeing what we can do to improve it or make changes that will make it good for the future. So welcome both of you. Just a bit about me. I've been around the RICS for a very long time, various roles with the group of Governing Council and America's World Regional Board Chair. I also now chair this steering group and am part of the Standards and Regulations Board. Formerly EY, property tax appraiser by training, or valuation as it is in the UK. And that's a bit about me. And Liz, why don't you just introduce yourself?
Sure, thank you, Peter. So I'm Liz Smith. I'm the director responsible for PwC's FTSE 350 non-executive director program, which is basically a program of continuing professional development for external non-executive directors, helping them to keep up to date with topical board issues. And by background, I am a chartered accountant and therefore have to comply with the CPD requirements of the ICAEW.
Excellent. And you are one of the three independent members that we have on the steering group. And Chris, to you, Chris Blundell, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thanks, Peter. Yes, Chris Blundell. I'm a chartered surveyor, joined the institution back in the 90s, and I've spent my working career working in development, housing development, apart from a six-year sojourn in Hong Kong, where I was lecturing at one of the universities there. And I'm currently I'm retired, although I'm a part-time PhD student looking at the development of large-scale new communities. My interest in education attracted me to being a member of the steering group, and I'm keen that we find ways which encourage members to embrace the opportunities of further education and training.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris. So we have a series of questions that we're going to go through as a group. And the first one, I think, Liz, I'll direct to you. So what is the argument for lifelong learning?
Well, I think, Peter, there are probably several. It definitely helps professionals to maintain and advance their skills, knowledge and competence. And that benefits clearly both their clients and the broader public. But I think there's another point that things change so fast these days with technological developments and new areas requiring different approaches. So, for example, climate change, sustainability, that there's a real need to keep up to speed with ongoing changes. And I think actually also it can be a talent retention and acquisition tool. I think providing that lifelong learning keeps people engaged and interested.
I think that's right. Thank you. Chris, any thoughts on that question?
Yes. I mean, I'd like to, if you like, kind of pick up Liz's point about we do live in a changing and evolving world, and thank heavens we do. It'd be rather dull without that. From technologies, sustainability is a very key and important part of the way that the land-based economies and property-based economies are evolving at present. And I think it's important that, as I think the leading profession involved in that, that we demonstrate our commitment to that in terms of the training and skills which we furnish ourselves with. Client expectations change, and if we don't reflect that in our skill sets and behaviours, then we will fall out of alignment with our clients. And I think that's not a good place to be in. Philosophically, as a profession, I think surely we want to strive for continuous improvement. Every contract I've been involved in recent years has had specific targets for the contracting team to do that, how we move, how we carry forward learning from one project to the next. And I think it's important that we embed that in what we do as professionals as well. And finally, I think it provides a really valuable assurance to the wider public. Well-trained surveyors are bound to be in great demand, which has got to be a good thing.
Yeah, it's a very good point, that last one. Also, we mustn't forget that our clients also are learning all the time in their everyday life. And we should not fall behind our clients' knowledge. So you're right. I think CPD is an essential part of a professional career. Chris, what sort of challenges and barriers are there, do you think, to developing an effective CPD framework?
Well, it's been an interesting journey so far on the steering group. And I think it's been, I've certainly found it quite stimulating in terms of looking at the way that other professional bodies have engaged with their members and engaged with the world in which they operate to try to find an appropriate set of measures of and encouragement for the development of the right sort of professional standards to respond to the issues we've just been talking about. And I think one of the issues which I feel has been, if you like, implicit in all of this is the question of striking the right balance between freedoms and prescription. As a body, we obviously want to make sure that those who bear the title of surveyor and the recognition that that carries are up to speed. Most of us work to, when we're in our working lives, work to a series of prescriptive standards. But what we want to do is to recognize that members are individuals who are motivated to actually get the right kind of skills and to deploy the right kind of skills. So I think finding the right balance between giving people freedom to explore their interests, to explore what works for them and what it means for them to have the right kind of professional training alongside what the needs of the rest of society are. So in other words, finding that which encourages members to explore the opportunities for training with the requirement that certain base standards are met. So, for example, issues around ethical performance and conduct are clearly very important, very much as picked up in the Bichard Review, etc. And what we want to do is to make sure that we give that framework for members to build their own portfolio of training, which responds to their professional development needs and equally gives them satisfaction and fulfillment as well.
Yep, absolutely, Liz.
Yes, I would absolutely pick up on a point that I think Chris alluded to there, which is that there's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all solution. You know, it may depend on the areas of work or specialization that an individual sits in. But at the same time, alongside that, we don't want to come up with something that is overly complex so that it becomes, you know, difficult to understand what the requirements are. And I think that comes on to needing to be clear if we do go into any kind of relevant categorizations, you know, whether it's structured, unstructured, formal, informal, that those are all clear and easily understood. So, yes, I think it's recognition that one size fits all is not necessarily the only approach without making the system too complex.
Yes, I think we have, in the feedback we've received so far, and I should mention that there is a survey that is currently active, and you can reach it from our page on the RICS.org website. From initial responses, I think there's been a confusion about formal versus informal. And I think one of the things that the steering group is going to do is make sure that becomes clearer and more easily understood for members. One of the things I recall from my career at EY and also at PricewaterhouseCoopers was that we would go away for annual CPD weeks where we'd be locked up in a hotel and in some strange place and be basically we were there to learn. And I would remember one of the courses was a federal or a tax law course, and I couldn't understand the relevance of why I was even doing it to my profession. But ultimately, it became very useful because in client meetings, I could understand what was being said around me, and I was able to fit in my knowledge into that conversation, which otherwise I wouldn't have been able to do. So, you know, it does broaden one's outlook and I think makes you a better professional. So Liz, let's ask you a question since I was talking about the Big Four. Why aren't all professionals motivated to engage in CPD, do you think?
I think there are probably a number of reasons here, Peter. I don't think it's not necessarily that they don't want to engage, but at the end of the day, everybody has busy lives and it can be the thing that drops down the to-do list, so to speak. I think there may also be a feeling amongst some that experience and sort of on-the-job learning replace CPD to some extent. And whilst there is probably an element of truth in that, I think there, as we said at the beginning, there are always new developments to keep pace with. So it will never get rid of the need for CPD. There may be issues. Some people may find perhaps that it's difficult to find relevant materials to engage with. They may not always be easily accessible. Possibly in some circumstances, people may be deterred by the cost of certain training courses. And maybe there's an element of perhaps feeling that there are no consequences for not engaging, which I guess brings to, you know, the monitoring and recording point. So I think there's a combination of reasons, but, you know, factors will vary from person to person.
Right. Chris, any thoughts on that? Why people aren't motivated?
I certainly endorse the point Liz makes, but I sort of wonder, you know, are we as a profession or as a professional body doing all we can to promote the benefits of CPD? I certainly think that, you know, it's implicit in what we do. And if you go through the various publications on the RICS website and in the media, you will see that. But it's something which we have to constantly focus on. The pressures, which I think only get greater as time goes on, means that it is difficult for people with busy lives to find the time to give the focus that they might need. But, you know, a profession which takes continuing education seriously is a profession which is in a better position to be self-regulated and to control its own agenda for the future. And so it's about finding and selling the right messages to encourage people. I think encouragement is by far the best way to actually get the most active and committed engagement. People can be engaged, but not necessarily committed if it's done for the wrong reasons. And I think it's about selling that, what's it done for me? And I think that that is always a good point of focus for these conversations.
Right. That's a very interesting point, because I remember in the chapter that I was a part of here in Los Angeles, we would have a monthly CPD session where one of our colleagues would speak for 15, 20 minutes, or half an hour, on what it was they did. And the things that I learned about BIM, for example, for people who are in the construction. I never knew what that was, but I learned about it there and realized how interesting that part of the profession is. And it was just an easy way, a social way of understanding CPD needs and what you could get out of it. Yeah, that's interesting. How has CPD impacted your career, do you think, Liz?
Oh, I think in a number of ways, actually, Peter. Firstly, I would say it gives me a degree of confidence and credibility even. Fortunately, my role provides access to learning from subject matter experts about various topical issues. So for me, access is not so much an issue. I think on a personal level, it keeps me engaged and interested as I feel I'm constantly developing, which is a much more enjoyable place to come from. I also think it makes me more alert to potential sort of risks and issues. So, for example, if we're doing something on bribery and corruption or money laundering, it just makes me aware of, you know, red flags to be alert to. One thing I would say as PwC employee is that I've also been helped by having firm requirements in addition to the CPD required by the Institute. And again, I know that's something that we're maybe thinking about, you know, where all members do work for large organisations, whether there's something we can do to piggyback off any requirements that their firms may have. But certainly working for PwC, that has been a great help.
Right. And we've also been talking, and I think, Chris, you might pick up on this, about SMEs and the need for the framework to be flexible enough and, should we say, cost-effective enough for SMEs to be able to achieve the number of hours required under the framework. Chris, any thoughts on that?
Yes. You know, I think CPD enriches careers. It therefore gives people opportunities to take on more interesting things, to take on more better rewarded employment, etc., which is a motivation for all of us. SMEs are it can be more challenging environments in which to find the opportunities simply because of scale. And therefore, I think that giving a requirement can actually be an assistance in terms of enabling people to reach out beyond. I mean, you mentioned, Peter, you work for EY and as for PwC. Those are huge global organizations with tremendous resources. Whereas one of the characteristics of the surveying profession is that it is dominated by and large by much smaller firms, much more locally based firms. And finding the resources and finding the people with the skill sets can be a challenge. So the more that we can do to create, if you like, a base layer of training and a base layer of training opportunities, and the CPD requirement does seek to do that, to actually put in place, an environment in which organizations come forward to offer training to meet what our requirements, the more effective that we can be in supporting SMEs in this. So, and equally supporting their ability to win work through having well-trained people. So I think it's an important issue for SMEs in particular.
Right, I think that's right. And we mustn't forget that RICS has over the years been putting more and more free content up for our members to use in order to help gain those CPD hours. Another question I have been asked before, which is, how are other people doing it? What other institutions or organizations in our natural and built environment, what are they doing in regards to CPD? Well, what I can say is that from a steering group perspective, we have looked at over 60 global organizations, both large and small, to determine what sort of structures, what sort of frameworks those organizations are using for their members. And it's all over the board. There are some who are far more prescriptive than we are. There are some who are less prescriptive than we are. And so it's been an interesting journey we've had since February to sort of look and see how we fit in that group of institutions and organizations around the globe. Any observations, Chris, about that one?
As you say, we've looked very extensively, and it's been quite a surprise to me. In one sense, I expected a great diversity because as a profession, we are diverse in the fields of work, but also diverse globally. And we have to make sure that in our work, we recognize the environments, the legislative framework, the economic framework, etc., of a very wide diversity of organizations and places of work. And therefore, there are bound to be differences of approach. As you say, it's been surprising. The one that surprised me was the self-certification approach. So, for example, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, which are very much about self-certification, and yet that's from a body which itself is very highly regulated. I'm not saying that's wrong. I wouldn't dream of saying that. But I think it shows the diversity which we have to consider to actually put in place that which will encourage members to be fully engaged in what is an important part of their professional development. What is the right framework?
Yes, I would agree. It's been an interesting journey. I think there has been some commonality in that, there's often an hours-based or points-based sort of reference to the CPD. And quite often there may be a structured, unstructured split. But there have been some surprises along the way. And I remember, I think it was it valuers in India where a certificate of practice was not renewed if evidence of CPD was not submitted. Now, I'm not suggesting anything we might come up with would be as extreme as that, but it was interesting to see the broad spectrum of what was out there when we did our investigations.
Right. It certainly shows the levels that people have gone to require members to do their CPD. Again, as I said earlier, the survey's out there for members to look at, think about, and give us their feedback. It's very important that we hear from members on this subject because we know it's fairly emotive, I have to say. It also ties into our ability to maintain our self-regulated framework. I know that we're being looked at fairly closely as to how we regulate members and to make sure that we maintain a profession that's in the public interest. If we are forced to lose that, I think it's very bad for the profession. I was at a conference recently, and there were 160 plus members in the room, and we did a live poll. 72% of those members said self-regulation was vitally important to the institution. So I think CPD and our ability to regulate that and to support our members in that regard is vital to maintaining that self-regulatory framework that we have. So coming now to, you know, what can we do to make CPD requirements more effective and more impactful? Chris, I'm going to ask you to start that one off.
Sure. I mean, I think picking up on your previous point, Peter, about regulation and self-regulation, I think it is up to the institution to promote the profession from government through to the various commercial and professional sectors we work in and to the general public. And that was a key theme coming out from Bichard, that we have a responsibility and as a profession, and therefore as a profession, I think that the representative body needs to take that forward. And we need to make sure that the message gets across that surveyors take skills and knowledge seriously and embed it in their professional practice. And I think that external advocacy, if you like, on behalf of the profession as a whole is an important role for the institution to play. And I think that will enhance confidence amongst decision makers and industry and clients and be to everyone's benefit. In order for that to happen, we need to make sure that we have an environment where surveyors are encouraged and motivated to take on the appropriate level and the appropriate structures of CPD. So I think it's up to us to put that in place and then to make sure that that members recognize the benefits of that, both for them individually and also for the profession as a whole. And that should make it more impactful.
Yep, indeed.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. And I think as we've gone through our sort of deliberations to date, there are a number of areas we've been reflecting on that we've touched on during the podcast that might also help make CPD requirements more effective and impactful. So they could be things like whether there should be different requirements for different areas of specialisation without overcomplicating the system. We talked a bit about whether the formal or informal classification should be clarified further, potentially whether there should be any more mandatory elements. RICS, as you've alluded to, Peter, already provides good access to a number of CPD opportunities, but whether there's more can be done there. And again, as we mentioned briefly, whether for individuals working in certain organisations, there might be the opportunity to piggyback off what was already being done within those.
Right, absolutely. And the other thing that we've talked about and have no conclusion yet, but it's something I'd like the audience to think about, is whether we allow reciprocity, if you will, from other organizations. You touched on it from PwC. I know that our members are sometimes members of other organizations around the globe, and it may be that we will look at that and think whether or not that CPD that they're doing for their local market is transferable and creditable, if you will, to our CPD requirements for RICS. But nothing's been decided on that. It is, again, I hope it shows the breadth and depth of the review that we're doing and the research that we've been doing into how this framework can be improved. I think we're almost approaching our time now. So, Liz, any final thoughts have you got you might want to add?
I think perhaps the only thing we haven't touched on during the conversation this afternoon is, and again, not something that we have decided either one way or another, but something that has come up in the odd conversation we've had, is whether there might be any need for reassessment or recertification. Again, as I say, no decision either way, but just something that people might want to consider as they respond to surveys.
Very good. Chris?
No, only just to encourage people to respond. The better the response rate and the more information we can gather from this, the more effective we will be able to advise on the structuring of the most appropriate form of CPD, both for members' needs and also for to meet all of those issues we've talked about in terms of encouraging confidence in the market, among the community, amongst decision makers in government and the like. So I would just strongly encourage people to respond to the questionnaire during the survey period.
Thank you, Chris. That's a good commercial. I don't have to do again. I've already done it three times. But I will mention that I did see a comment on LinkedIn which was quite supportive of what we're doing, including saying that the read-in information that goes along with the survey was actually quite well put together. So that's encouraging that we're getting some strong and positive feedback from some of our members as they go through the survey. Well, thank you both, Liz Smith and Chris Blundell. Thank you so much for your time today. I hope it was interesting for all, and I hope that you'll click the link that is part of this podcast and do our survey. Help us out so that when we come to early part of next year, we can come up with some good conclusions that members are supportive of. And with that, I'll draw this to a close and thank everybody for participating.